Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
92.9 FM ESPN presents the area's only national columnist who spends his afternoons bringing unique perspective to Memphis radio. He'll make you think. He'll make you laugh. He'll sometimes make you change the station if children are around. And he apologizes in advance for that. It's 4 o'clock. Let's get into it. This is the Gary Parish Show. Today's special guest host is Matt Stark.
All right, we're off and running on this Friday edition of the Gary Parish Show. Matt Stark holding it down here for GP in Memphis. The Matt Stark on Twitter. Brad Carson is across the glass.
What's up?
Going to be joined momentarily by GP. He's in Durham, North Carolina, in advance of a kind of a big basketball game tomorrow between number 4 Duke and number 1 Virginia. After GP, we'll be joined by Dan Wolkin from USA Today at 4:45. Jeff Calkins at 5 o'clock, and then we tap out a little early. 5:30 to be exact, because it's Memphis Grizzlies game night. They are in Boston to play the Celtics. Gary Darby already kicking around the hallways here. He will pregame at 4, start at 5:30. Then it's Eric Hasseltine on the call at 6. But we're going to open with our man, Gary Parish from Durham, North Carolina. GP, all good with you today?
Yeah, things are good. The weather's nice. I went and kicked it in Krzyzewskiville with the Cameron Crazies, and now I'm getting ready to go back out to Cameron Indoor to do some more CBS Sports HQ stuff. So, life's okay. How things in Memphis?
Everything's good here, man. What are the crazies like? Is it in full-blown, like, tent mode, and they're all out there eating pizzas and just hanging out for the next, 18, 24 hours, I guess?
No, I mean, that's exactly what it is. They were all very happy with the weather. It's warm here. Like, you could be outside in short sleeves right now. You could be outside in shorts right now if you wanted to. And so, given that they've been outside for days and will be outside at least for another day, they were all thrilled with the weather. And, you know, it seemed like a pretty – I don't know what college kids are like. I'm too old to even know. But, like, it seemed like a respectable group of young people. They were nice. They weren't disruptive to us doing live hits.
Mm-hmm.
They were
That's always good.
As you know, right? That people love to stand behind a reporter going live on television.
Yes, indeed.
And just scream and yell and wave and whatever. There was none of that. They were gracious hosts and offering us food or whatever we wanted. And so an impressive group of young people looking forward to a basketball game tomorrow.
One of my most memorable live but not on air hits, I was acting as the camera operator in Richmond. While my man Greg was doing the live hit, we're outside of wherever we were in Norfolk or wherever that is. Mike Vick is getting ready to announce that he's skipping his junior year at Virginia Tech, turning pro and all that. So we're live outside this facility. And as you mentioned, there's just people everywhere, right? And this one dude starts walking up. And he's, like, not in the background, like, walking up like he's legitimately now. Like, his chin is just about on Greg's shoulder. And as we're cutting out to get to whatever the prearranged story that we have, you can hear me actually say it. And I didn't, like, consciously do it, but I'm like, yo, dude, get out of here.
Right.
You know, you always got to watch out for that. All right, so a couple questions I want to get to about what I was listening to early today on the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball podcast. First of all, I want to know how you are now Dr. Gary Parish. But before we get into that, we've actually got some Grizzlies news today coming from our friend Shams Charina. If I said that right, over at the Athletic.
Yeah, something like that.
Charina,
maybe Gary knows. How do you say his last name, Gary?
I just call him by his first name.
Shams. Everybody calls him Shams.
Just blow right through it.
That's smart. That is a TV guy right there.
Lead NBA insider.
Shams is a little bit like Tua. Until you master the last name.
Yeah, you're right.
You just call him Tua. Once I realized Tua Tagovailoa was going to be a thing, mm-hmm. I just really sat in front of my computer.
And you
just say, Tua Tagovailoa, Tua Tagovailoa, Tua Tagovailoa, until you get it. Same thing with college basketball. There's always these names that are just difficult. And if you know you're going to have to say them all the time, live on TV or live on the radio, you just have to, like, buckle down. It really takes a minute. Buckle down and learn the name. Mm-hmm. So, like, when I'm in studio, last year, there's this emerging big man for West Virginia named Sagabaugh Kanate. And it becomes clear I'm going to have to keep talking about Sagabaugh Kanate. So I just, rather than have to figure it out every time, I just sit there and I'm like, okay, Sagabaugh Kanate, Sagabaugh Kanate, it's Sagabaugh Kanate. His name's Sagabaugh Kanate. Block shot by Sagabaugh Kanate. So it just becomes second nature. Yes. Otherwise, you'll just drive yourself crazy.
Muscle memory. All right, right now, put you on the spot. Can you say the Greek freak's name correctly?
Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Pretty good. I think that was it. Something like that.
Giannis Antetokounmpo.
So here's I noticed that the other night I'm watching, and Pete Pranica was talking about it, and he actually said he asked the Bucks guy, hey, am I saying this right? Like, you know, because you'll hear different pronunciations of it still. Mm-hmm. And he said this guy, like, constantly gets updates from Giannis on, you know, how we're saying it now thing. And there's always those weird people like Calipari, right? I was always – Calipari. And then I got here and they're like, no, it's Calipari. Or maybe it was the other way around. But
no, it is Calipari, but some people call it Calipari. What I always find funny is there's a handful of people that will get identified in a certain way by professional speakers simply because you're trying to avoid the difficult name. So Tua was like that. Nobody calls nobody we're talking about Oklahoma just says Kyler.
Yeah.
Kyler. It's always Kyler Murray, Kyler Murray. Yeah. But with Tua, it was always like Tua. And then Tua completes a 35-year because they don't want to mess around with Tagovailoa. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Giannis is the same way. People will call him Greek freak simply to ignore the last name.
No doubt about it.
Avoid it. And then the other one that was always funny when he was in college, now everybody knows the name, but when he was less famous, you would always get people talking about Ndamukong Suh.
Oh, yeah.
They would just be like, they'd be like, Mr. Sue. And there's Mr. Sue with the tackle. You wouldn't say Mr. anybody else. They were just trying to avoid Ndamukong. So, that's the thing that people do. You avoid difficult names if you can. But I'm starting to figure out the ones that are important. Sagabaugh Kanate.
Beautiful.
I mean, we talked about the Bucks the entire show by and large with the Grizzlies yesterday. I never had to say
Giannis or Greek freak.
I didn't say the Greek freak's full name the entire show. I was
You can actually get away with it with Giannis now because he has both
so
a
popular
nickname, and he's a one name star and he has a nickname. So you can alternate from Giannis to Greek freak and get away with it.
Like LeBron. If his last name was something crazy, it doesn't matter. You can just call him LeBron or King James,
and
you're good to go.
Kobe, Kobe, any of those.
It don't matter. So our friend Shams, we're going to leave it there, who writes for The Athletic.
I was wondering how we got on there. Now I remember. Okay.
For a second, I was like, what the hell was I going to ask him?
Yeah.
So Shams is reporting that when Robert Parra, Memphis Grizzlies owner, was in town earlier this week, which, of course, had been reported. I know it's been discussed. When he was in town, that he had a sit-down, I guess, a meal, whatever, with Mark Gasol and Mike Conley talking about the state of the team. What exactly do you think went down in there other than, yo, guys, like, what do I do? How do you feel about this? Like, what should we do?
There were no details from Shams in that story, but, it's unsurprising. I mean, if the owner is in town, for one of the few times that he comes to town, it would be weirder if he didn't meet with Mike and Mark, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
And so I would imagine you sit down and you ask a whole bunch of questions. What are the problems as you guys see them? Are you comfortable with the coaching staff? How do you think that's going? Which teammates do you believe in? Which ones do you not believe in? If we were to make Jermichael available at the trade deadline, how do you feel about that?
Mm-hmm.
Mark, do you want us to make you available at the trade deadline? If we if you don't, but we decided to, how would that make you feel?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about our front office? Who do you like? Who do you not like? I mean, these are, I think, very normal conversations. Do you guys still think there's a chance we can be good enough? Be honest with me. Be honest with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Should we pivot into another direction, or should we try to get back in this thing? Can you turn it around? How did we get here? How do we get out of here? These are all the types of things I would be asking Mike and Mark if I were the owner of the Grizzlies. And so I saw some reaction on Twitter, like, I don't know, that maybe received this news, very, bit of news in a possibly negative way, and I don't know that it's significant, but I also don't know that it's bad or wrong. Again, if the franchise is going the wrong direction and the owner happens to be in town and the two franchise players are also in town, I would find it stranger for them not to meet as opposed to them meeting.
Not only that, which is an excellent point, he's also, like, never here. So it's not like he's Cuban who's here all the time or at all of his games, right, or something like that, where he's constantly around, where you're like, okay, it doesn't surprise me if they're not having lunch, you know, once a week, whatever. But if the guy's not here that much, number one, and number two, he has publicly said, well, maybe not publicly, but he sure told Jeff Calkins that he was going to take a more hands-on approach, this would seem to certainly fall under that, right? Like, if you're not going to meet with your players in the midst of, you know, what's become obviously a pretty trying season, and at least get the temperature on what's happening and figure out a lot of those questions that you just mentioned, then, yeah, then we got serious problems. Like, I don't have a problem with them meeting at all. I think I'd be surprised if they didn't.
Right. I would have – if the news was instead Robert Pera was in Memphis for 48 hours and declined to meet with Marc Gasol and Mike Conley,
that would be weirder. Yeah.
That would be weirder to me. I don't know that it would be a problem, but it would be stranger than this. And the other thing is, Robert Pera owns the Grizzlies. He is a he says that he has his hand in every major decision, and I believe him. So he's got more power than anybody else in the franchise, more than Chris Wallace, more than Marc Gasol, more than Mike Conley. He is going to play a bigger role in what this franchise becomes than anybody you see in uniform. Except for maybe Jaren Jackson, but still, I would say the owner is going to play a bigger role.
Mm-hmm.
I say all that to say this. The owner, he enjoys basketball, but he's not a basketball player. And I find it, just like I am a basketball columnist and analyst, but I'm not a basketball player.
Are we gonna discount what Robert Pera did during that celebrity All-Star game a couple years ago?
Yeah,
like
exactly.
He had like 6 points or something, you know? He wanted to challenge Tony Allen. He might take issue with that, GP.
We were going to broadcast that game.
I am going to discount that because I don't.
Fair enough.
Into it. But what I would say is that, you know, I'm always interested in talking to basketball coaches about other basketball coaches because they know who's good. They know who isn't. And so I remember Buzz Williams one time. This is, a decent example. Buzz Williams, for people who don't know, he's the incredible coach at Virginia Tech. He's got a top 10 team right now. He never really played basketball. You know, like it's why I sort of roll my eyes when whether people are tweeting at me or anybody else that has a job like me, what do you know you never played? Yeah. Well, you don't have to know. Having played basketball at a high level is not a prerequisite to being able to discuss it at a high level or enjoy it at a high level. To think otherwise is just silly. As long as you spend enough time talking to the right people and helping them shape your understanding of the sport and the issues surrounding the sport. And so when Buzz Williams got into college coaching, he said that at recruiting events, he would consistently sit next to guys he knew were good at their jobs. And he said he would just try to ask them as many questions as he could without bothering them. In other words, like he'd sit down to next to maybe a high major coach, and he was like a mid-major assistant. And the reason he would do that is because the high major coach wouldn't be threatened by him. They're clearly not recruiting the same player or the same caliber player. So Buzz might really, you know, get a seat beside Roy Williams, for instance. And he'd introduce himself if he didn't know him, and he'd say, Coach, who are you watching? And he'd say, I'm watching number 7. Okay, what do you like about him? What do you see? What did you see on that play? What makes you think he can play for you? What does he do that makes you think he'll flourish for you? And Buzz said, if you have that conversation 500 times with guys who are successful at evaluating basketball prospects, you will, at the end of that, know how to evaluate basketball prospects because they're teaching you what to look for. Maybe you don't know it the way they know it, but you can learn it from them because they're just telling you what it is they look for. And I do think that there's a little bit of a thread between that and what Robert Pera could do by talking to the guys who are the focal points of your on-the-court product. Like, Robert Pera might think a certain player is on a good contract, serving a good purpose, deserving of everything he's getting. But what if Mark Gasol and Mike Conley say, no, we're in the locker room with this dude every day. He's trash. Mm-hmm. He's killing us on the court. They're going to be able to see things that he just doesn't see. They're going to know things that he just doesn't know. And so Robert Parrott could fly into Memphis and think that his coaching staff is doing a good job, that his front office has things under control, that certain players on his roster are the future of are part of the future, and the two best players are on the team could say, well, you're wrong about this, you're misguided about this, and you're wrong about that. And so I think these are conversations that can be very important and useful. They, you know, if you're I would want the I guess I'll bottom line it this way. I would want the guy making the decisions that connected to the franchise to have as much information about his franchise as possible. Mm-hmm. And having, as long as we believe they're honest conversations with Mike and Mark, I think that there can be a benefit from that.
What are the odds, do you think, that Chandler Parsons' name came up during this sit-down?
I'm sure it had to come up, you know, right? Like, what happened there? What did you think of him? Do you like him? I mean, when I say Robert Parrott, these are the questions I would ask. These are really some very basic questions I would ask.
Yeah.
When CBS is thinking about hiring somebody that they know I know, they might reach out to me and say, okay, we know what he looks like on TV. We know what he sounds like on TV. We know how he is at doing that job. What kind of guy is he? Do you like him? Is he easy to work with? You know, they'll ask questions like that just because I might be able to offer something that they otherwise wouldn't know. And so if I were Robert Parrott, I would be asking these questions about not only Chandler Parsons, but like Jaren Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
In theory, at some point, the Grizzlies are going to put like a $100 million contract on the table for Jaren Jackson to try to keep him from not leaving Memphis. You want to know what kind of guy that guy is. And by all accounts, he's like the best. You know, early in the gym, last one out, all the cliches, good young man, no problems. But, like, I would want to know that, and Mike and Mark would have a good sense for that. And so, yeah, I would assume Chandler's name came up, but I would assume just about anybody who is a prominent member of that roster, I would imagine that I just know if I were the owner, I'd be asking about everything and everybody because I would be the owner of a franchise that's in a bad place right now. And every bit of information that might help me get it turned in a different direction is information that I'd want to have.
Talking with Gary Parrish. He is down in Durham, North Carolina. Big basketball game tomorrow, number 4 Duke, number 1 Virginia. So I did see your CBS Eye on College Basketball podcast. I didn't see it. I listened to it. And I have to ask, so you are billing yourself as Dr. Gary Parrish. Now, was this something like University of Phoenix Online? Like, how did you come to be a man of letters? What did I miss?
After Trey Jones got hurt on Monday night, because it was a shoulder injury,
mm-hmm.
That can go about a million different ways. Like, the injury he suffered could be a day-to-day injury or a month-to-month injury. In other words, when you hear somebody has a torn ACL, you know exactly what that means.
Mm-hmm.
When you hear somebody has suffered a torn Achilles, you know exactly what that means. This shoulder separation of the AC joint, you don't know what it means. And so on Tuesday morning's podcast, we were, you know, based off of conversations we'd had with people connected to the Duke program, trying to guesstimate, like, how long Trey Jones might be out.
Mm-hmm.
And I said something along the lines of, let me preface what I'm saying by acknowledging I'm not a doctor. But, and Norlander sort of laughed and said, people always say, you know, I'm not a doctor. Like, we know you're not a doctor, right? And we were sort of joking back and forth. And I said, you know what? I've never talked about it publicly, but I actually am a doctor. And then I started I started referencing my medical background. And I was diagnosing Trey Jones and every other slightly injured college basketball player. And then, of course, some of the diehard listeners to the podcast picked up on it. And there was jokes about whether I would if I could get a stethoscope in advance of Saturday's game and wear it courtside, just sort of be sitting there like every other reporter, but actually have a stethoscope around my neck like I'm a doctor. So it just became one of those little quirky, goofy things that the podcast regularly produces, for better or worse.
I think now that it's out there, you ride it. I think you do get that stethoscope, and then you just keep it, and then just going forward, you just bill yourself as that, and sooner or later, that's how people will start referring to you. I don't think there's a bad idea at all. All right, listen, we got to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk Memphis Tigers. They got a new game on tap coming up, resuming a series with an old rival. We'll get into that when we come back from this. Matt Starkin for GP, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Download the Radio.com app on your phone from the App Store and make sure you favorite 92.9 FM ESPN. Hoop City's place for all the names. Golic and Wingo. Weekdays 5 a.m. till 9 a.m. The Jeff Calkins Show. Jason and John. The Eric Hasseltine Show. The Gary Parrish Show. The Memphis Grizzlies and the NBA. The Memphis Tigers and college hoops. Memphis Tigers football and the SEC.
Favorite 92.9 FM ESPN on the Radio.com app.
92.9 FM ESPN is Memphis's number one sports place. A Radio.com station.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gary Parrish Show. Live from the Bluff Restaurant and Sports Bar Studios on 92.9 FM ESPN.
All right, welcome back. Busy Friday with you, Matt Stark in studio. Got Dan Wolkin coming up at about 4:45. Jeff Calkins at 5 o'clock. Gary Darby, Grizzlies pregame 5:30, and the Grizzlies at 6 o'clock. But we're back to our conversation with Gary Parrish. Gary, you know we are giving away Grizzlies tickets for Monday's game. We're going to do that right now. Give away a pair of tickets, lower-level tickets, to Monday's game with the Grizz. Third caller, 535-3776, 535-ESPN. Here's the catch. You got to get to studios by 5:30 to pick up those tickets, but two good seats at the lower level. And speaking of giving away tickets, GP, Grizzlies are offering tickets to Monday's Martin Luther King Jr. celebration game with the Pelicans to furloughed federal workers. They announced this about, an hour or so ago.
Look at this. Pelican, play it. Yeah. Come on, Pelican.
Giving away tickets and beginning actually like right now at the FedEx Forum box office. Any workers with an ID for a federal government department be able to claim two tickets to Monday's celebration game while supplies last. Limit two tickets per government ID. GP, you know this as well as anyone. Since day one, this organization, the Grizzlies, have really done community relations. I don't want to say better than any other franchise out there because a lot of them are doing really good things. But certainly, led by Michael Heisley, the initial owner of the team, they have really done their part to ingratiate themselves with the community in that way and being civic-minded. And this is another nice example.
No question. They take great pride in being Memphis's team, and they have tried in a variety of ways to really connect with the city and then just, genuinely do kind things for people. And, obviously these are tricky times in our country with the government shutdown now lasting longer than any other government shutdown over a controversial topic. And, I know that it can become easy for lots of us to sort of tune it out because, all we see is one talking head after another, one politician after another on television, just insisting that their side is right with little hope, at least on the surface, for compromise. And you just sort of, your life's easier if you can just sort of stay out of it or stay above it. But the truth is there are a lot of people that this is impacting in very real ways. Like, I don't know how many people even listening right now can afford to miss a paycheck, much less two, much less three. Is that the thing that leads to you losing a car, losing a home, just falling way behind in a variety of ways? And so I think Jason Wexler, when he announced this earlier today, acknowledged that, relatively speaking, it's a small gesture, but it's something, and they didn't have to do anything. And anytime people do something for other people that they didn't otherwise have to do, I'm two thumbs up. So, yeah, nice gesture by the Grizzlies, and I hope people who qualify to take advantage of it choose to.
No doubt. Talking with Gary Parrish from Durham, North Carolina. So the Tigers, the other tenant at FedEx Forum, going to resume their basketball series with Ole Miss. That came out today about a home-and-home starting next year. I guess that rivalry that was once stale is no longer such. And this is a good thing for everyone. We covered this when we talked about Tennessee and Memphis resuming that series and then playing that series and then all the fallout from that game. But I know that you are in favor of the regional rivalries, and this is certainly one that will be fun to watch unfold over the next couple of years.
Yeah, this is something that Penny subscribes to that, frankly, John Calipari did not and Josh Pastner did not. Mm-hmm. You know, John first and then Josh would consistently say, we're going to play a national schedule. It's important to play a national schedule, and we're not going to play the regional SEC schools because we gain nothing from it. We're not going to recruit in Oxford, but Ole Miss is going to recruit in Memphis. So why would we let Ole Miss come in and play a game? We're not going to recruit Knoxville, but Tennessee is going to recruit Memphis. So why would we let Tennessee come in and play a game here? Same thing with Arkansas. And I just never thought that that was a good argument, because if it really does come down to, if a kid's decision, he's picking between Memphis and Ole Miss, mm-hmm. and he ends up picking Ole Miss because if he stays 4 years in college, he'll get to play twice inside FedEx Forum. Like, if playing inside FedEx Forum matters to that kid, he should just go to Memphis and play there 18 times a year, you know, as opposed to two times in a four-year career. Yeah. So I just never – just logically, it doesn't make sense. And then beyond that, this whole thing about play a national schedule, it used to mean something like it's the only way to get on national television. But now everything's on national television. Mm-hmm. There's ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPNU, CBS Sports Network, FS1, CBS, Fox Sports, ABC, all like a million channels showing college basketball games, not to mention the streaming stuff. So you don't have to play a national schedule to get on national television. It used to be like, well, they don't want to put two schools from the same region on national TV because it cuts your audience. Like you want somebody from a East Coast market and somebody from a Midwest market or whatever. But now, like, there's so much stuff on TV that, if you are a program of Memphis's caliber playing any Power 5 school, even a regional school in your non-league schedule, like, that game's going to be on national television somewhere. I promise you, and I have no insight into this whatsoever, I promise you Memphis Ole Miss will be on national television somewhere. So you're playing a national schedule now doesn't mean what it used to mean. And beyond all that, I want to play a national schedule. Okay, go play Rutgers. You know, that gets you into the New York market. It's an East Coast team. It's a Big Ten program. Does that do anything for you, though? Explain to me how playing Rutgers helps you. And so if a Memphis coach wanted to go play a national schedule and he could get home and homes with Kentucky or North Carolina or Duke or Kansas or Indiana or some big needle-moving basketball brands, I would say do that. Gonzaga. Oh, do that. That would be awesome because those are brands that your fan base will get excited about. But short of that, if you can't get it, go play Ole Miss. Go play Tennessee. Go play Arkansas because your fans, even the ones who like to jump on a message board, because I know this has for years been a message board debate, and I think it was really just people repeating what John Calipari told them without thinking it through. They're like, we're not going to play the SEC schools. If they want to play us, they can invite us to play the SEC in the SEC, right? Make us members. We'll play all of them. That's what John used to say. Yeah. Well, that's a little bit like cut off your nose to spite your face. Like taking a stand against against playing SEC schools. For what? Because I promise you, the most well-attended game this season inside FedEx Forum is going to be that Tennessee game. Mm-hmm. And it's not simply because Tennessee was a top-10 team. It's because Memphis likes to play Tennessee and stuff. And if you can beat them, it's even better. But Memphis does like just playing Tennessee and stuff. Because, and I said this earlier today with Jason and John, if you live in the Memphis area, odds are you are married to an Ole Miss alum or fan, like I am, or you live next door to one, like I do, or you work with one or two or however many. Mm-hmm. Same thing with Tennessee, same thing with Arkansas. And so we all associate on a daily basis with people connected to these schools. And it's fun to look forward when my favorite team is playing your favorite team. And so I've always been in favor of Memphis scheduling games like this. play Arkansas, play Ole Miss, play Tennessee. When I say regional SEC schools, those are the three main ones, I think, that actually move a needle with the fan base, and that Penny is committed to playing Tennessee and committed to playing Ole Miss, and I believe he said he would like to play Arkansas too. I'm completely on board with it. I think this is something that he's doing differently than what John Calipari and Josh Pastor did, and he's doing it right, and they did it wrong.
Clearly, Penny, from what he's shown so far, isn't losing anyone that he is trying to get, certainly in the city of Memphis. Does this series do anything for Kermit Davis, for what he's already started doing down in Oxford? But does this help him at all? You kind of discussed it, but the big talk was always, yeah, you know, oh, you get to be on TV. Okay, well, we already covered that because everybody's on TV. Does this help Kermit at all, though? Does this do anything for him?
It can't hurt. I mean, I come down initially on the idea that a player, because we're talking about this from two different perspectives. The Memphis perspective under John Calipari was always, I don't want Ole Miss coming into Memphis to play because they're trying to recruit Memphis. Mm-hmm. The implication being, and it will help them recruit Memphis. And perhaps it will, but it won't. And this is where I talk about it from, it won't hurt Memphis because Memphis is not going to lose a kid it prioritizes to Ole Miss or to Tennessee or to Arkansas. It almost never has. And so, I'll circle back to the DJ Jeffrey stuff. When people were saying his finalists are Mississippi State, Ole Miss, and Memphis, and he's leaning toward Mississippi State, what did I say a million times?
Not happening.
I said, tell me the last time a Memphis area player that Memphis prioritized decided not to go to Memphis and instead went to Ole Miss and Mississippi State. It does not happen. That's not the way this works. So that's not the way this is going to go down this time. And then surprise, surprise, DJ Jeffries commits to Memphis. So it's going to be the same thing. What Kermit will do is going to be the same thing Andy Kennedy did, which is target the Memphis area prospects he likes that Penny doesn't prioritize or that Penny makes a backup plan. Go get those guys. Because if you're trying to recruit a top 50 kid that Penny wants, you're wasting your time. And that would be my message to everybody except the biggest, baddest programs in America. If Penny Hardaway prioritizes a Memphis area kid, unless things just go really badly and then it becomes a circus and then whatever. But right now, if Memphis prioritizes a Memphis area kid, unless you're Kentucky, Duke, North Carolina, Kansas, and maybe that's it, don't waste your time because you're wasting your time. And I think Kermit is probably smart enough to know that. In other words, you're not going to see Ole Miss in there trying to bang heads on a McDonald's All-American from Memphis that Penny Hardaway prioritizes. You find the backup plan that Memphis has for that kid, and you target him from the start, and you might be able to get him to commit before Memphis moves on to him and prioritizes that guy. A lot of recruiting is just being smart about, you know, who you're going to target, and I think Kermit's going to be smart about it. So playing in Memphis won't hurt. But it won't hurt Ole Miss, and perhaps it can help. But my larger point is that Ole Miss playing in Memphis will not hurt Memphis. Mm-hmm. And if it will not hurt Memphis, then the game is in Memphis's best interest.
It's Gary Parrish from Durham, North Carolina. Listen, we appreciate your time today. Go get some. See if you can score some free pizza from those college Cameron Crazies, and enjoy that game tomorrow. Should be a fun one.
It should be a fun one. Thanks for doing what you're doing, brother. I'll talk to you. Bye.
Gary Parrish down in Durham, North Carolina. When we come back, Nick Saban, is he looking into bulk rates right now on Help Wanted ads? We'll talk about that with Dan Wolkin.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gary Parish Show, live from the Bluff Restaurant and Sports Bar Studios on 92.9 FM, ESPN. Today's special guest host is Matt Stark.
Made me say, ooh. All right, welcome back. We are moving along through this Friday edition of the Gary Parish Show. Matt Stark sitting in the big chair. We'll have Jeff Calkins with us at the top of the hour. Then we got some Grizzlies basketball. They're up in Boston tonight. Gary Darby going to get you ready with the pregame show at 5:30. Eric Hasseltine on the call at 6. Going to talk a little college football now with Dan Wolkin, national columnist for USA Today. Let's make it the big interview.
Award-winning writers, athletes, coaches, the biggest names in sports. It's the Gary Parish Show Big Interview. Presented by Ruth's Chris Steakhouse in Memphis. Now on 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Dan, Matt Stark in Memphis. How are you today, man?
I'm good, Matt. How are you?
I'm doing great. Interesting week in college football again, even though all the games have stopped. So Alabama lost another assistant coach with defensive coordinator. I don't even know how to pronounce this guy's name. Tosh Lupoy. That's what I was going to go with. Okay. So he left Bama to join the Cleveland Browns. And since losing the national championship, the Tide have now lost their offensive coordinator, their co-offensive coordinator, quarterbacks coach, offensive line coach, and now their defensive coordinator.
Jeez.
It's five assistants. Last year, Saban had replaced six. He's also losing seven underclassmen, the most in a single year in his time with the Tide. So I know it's Nick Saban, and much like Bill Belichick, I'm always ready to give him the benefit of the doubt. But with stability being a big thing in college football, particularly when it comes to recruiting, and at times, like we saw with Bama last year, play calling. Do you think at some point all of this turnover starts to become an issue? Maybe not an issue, but starts to affect Alabama on the field?
It could potentially, and I think there's probably going to be even more than what's already happened. I think certainly Saban needed to upgrade his staff. If you look at what they did this year, obviously they got to 14-0, but in the final game, they got out-coached pretty badly by Clemson, and I think the continuity with Clemson helps. They knew how to game plan. They knew how to prepare, and they've got great chemistry, and people don't really leave. There's not a ton of turnover at Clemson. On the other hand, you know, I do think that Saban likes keeping people on edge. He likes shaking things up. He likes change. I think when you look at Alabama, it's a tough working environment for people. Saban demands a lot of his assistants. It's not for everybody. I think in the Dan Enos situation, just as an example, he probably would have been the offensive coordinator for Alabama next year. But he looked at an opportunity to go to Miami and said, you know, I can make good money down there. Miami's a nice place to live, and I'm not going to have to spend 17 hours a day in the office, which is what Nick Saban wants to do. And it does grind people down. There's no doubt about it. So there's always just going to be kind of a revolving door. I think more important is who they hire to bring in to replace some of these people. I saw a report earlier that Jimmy Lake could be the next defensive coordinator at Alabama. Coach from Washington, excellent coach, would certainly be an upgrade over Tosh Lupoy. And that's the kind of move that I think will help them. But I'm not predicting a collapse for Alabama. They've got too many players and just too much infrastructure. But there's no doubt, I mean, on the margins, having all the staff turnover year after year after year, at some point you just make some bad hires. And I think that's what happened this year.
One of those underclassmen, of course, that Saban will be losing is Jalen Hurts, who is transferring to Oklahoma. Obviously, we all know about Jalen, proven winner. Great wheels. Can he throw the ball is the question. Well, now he's with Lincoln Riley, who's done okay with his last two quarterbacks, who have each won the Heisman. What are the odds that after a summer and, you know, a couple months working with Riley, Jalen Hurts is looking like a brand-new man?
I think he improved this year. If you watch the SEC championship game, made some big plays in the passing game. I think when he got in on some games that were maybe already out of hand, he showed some nice throws and the ability to do some things there. So I don't think Jalen Hurts was ever a lost cause in terms of passing the football. And he did make some throws, some deep throws, some play action throws in his first couple years. You know, it was more sort of the touch throws, the intermediate passes, where he maybe had some accuracy issues. And I think he will benefit from having a summer and a spring to work with Lincoln Riley. And I think he'll benefit from the system. I think he'll benefit from playing in the Big 12 against teams that are not as strong defensively. I think Jalen Hurts will be very productive and very effective. And, you know, there's no reason to think that any quarterback that Lincoln Riley puts in that offense is going to fail, because nobody has done it yet. So I like his chances of coming out looking pretty good next year.
Now, right after word broke that Hurts was going to end up at Oklahoma, Riley and the Sooners are in the news because they were, at the time, blocking the transfer of their graduate quarterback, Austin Kendall, to West Virginia. Mountaineers, of course, being in the Big 12. So public outrage ensued. He was getting killed all over the place, including everywhere on social media. But essentially, he's blocking a kid who threw 28 passes in 2 years, who then just watched you bring in a guy who he was going to have to back up in Jalen Hurts. And then this one ended the way they all do. The coach gave in, and today, actually, Kendall committed to West Virginia. So my question is, Dan, why do we keep watching this movie? Why do coaches keep opening themselves up for being the backlash of being the jerk when it's always going to end the same way? Josh Pastner went through it here in Memphis with Austin Nichols. It's just always going to end the way that it does, where they have to give in.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm not sure with the Oklahoma thing, you know, did they actually say they were going to block him, or were they trying to work through the nuts and bolts of it to come to a decision? Either way, it's going to leak, because people understand that the media and the public pressure is a powerful thing.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to try to get out in front of it and essentially force a decision. And, yeah, I mean, if you're a school at this point and you've got a guy, especially who's a graduate transfer, who wants to leave, even if it's in conference, you're better off just basically, you know, signing off on it right away. And I think the Big 12 will follow the SEC essentially and making a rule that graduate students can go anywhere. There's no penalty at all within the league. The SEC changed that rule last spring, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
I bet the Big 12 does the same, because it's just not worth the fight.
Talking with Dan Wolkin, national columnist for USA Today. He's on Twitter, at Dan Wolkin. All right, before we let you get out of here, so your hometown of Atlanta bracing for Super Bowl apocalypse coming up, which could be really special if this government shutdown continues. We're talking about the traffic getting in and out of Atlanta. I asked this earlier this week to Jay Busby, another Atlantean, I guess is how you guys refer to yourselves, maybe.
Yeah.
How would Atlanta feel about a New Orleans, New England Super Bowl? I know we got a lot of work to do on both sides. I'm not trying to jinx anything. But Falcons fans obviously hate the Saints, and they've got a pretty good reason to hate my Patriots, thanks to the greatest comeback in Super Bowl history. So how is the common man in Atlanta going to feel if that happens?
Well, you know, I think there's probably going to be some coverage of it and some fun barbs to be had going back and forth. There's definitely a rivalry between New Orleans and Atlanta. But Atlanta's motto is the city that's too busy to hate. In other words,
is that real? Is that, is that really it?
Yeah. In other words, the people here generally
–
the people here are very busy. It's a very, you know, business-oriented city. And no matter what it is, you know, people are just too busy to worry about hating things. So I think really when it comes down to it, there's going to be a lot of Saints fans who invade Atlanta if such a thing comes to pass.
Mm-hmm.
But they're probably mostly going to be downtown and, you know, in bars and places that most locals aren't going to go anyway. Mm-hmm. So I think, yeah, it's definitely kind of a nightmare for people to sit there and say, okay, the team who's our biggest rival will play this in the Super Bowl against the team we blew the 28-3 lead to, and we are supposed to not like either of these things, and it's just a miserable Super Bowl. But ultimately, I think people are just too busy, and they're just going to kind of ignore it.
Fair enough. Well, thoughts and prayers. Hopefully all this travel stuff gets ironed out and it's not as bad as everyone is anticipating that it could be. Listen, we appreciate your time as always, Dan. Take care.
All right. Thank you.
Dan Wolkin from USA Today. The city too busy to hate. That doesn't sound like my kind of city, Brad.
I did just see where Atlanta, with the Super Bowl stuff, could have some security challenges.
That's what I'm talking about. From the TSA, it's the busiest airport in the country. and I think it was over like $100,000 or something
That federal stuff is going to affect this for sure.
Correct.
Yeah.
So, and obviously Super Bowl Sunday and then Super Bowl Monday when everyone tries to leave town or somewhere like
that. They're too busy, Matt.
Too busy to hate. That's weird.
Yep.
You know who isn't too busy to hate?
Memphis. We are not busy at all.
No, we're not busy enough to hate. You know who else isn't too busy to hate?
Oh,
Jeff Calkins.
Don't let
the little James Taylor music fool you, okay? He's got plenty of hate in his heart, including for my New England Patriots.
Nice.
We may or may not talk about the Pats, but we will talk to Jeff Calkins when we come back.
Ask Alexa or Google to play 92.9 ESPN. This is WMFS-FM and HD1 Bartlett. WMFS Memphis, a radio.com station. Home of the Jason and John Show, weekdays 11 a.m. till 2 p.m.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.